Right, well, thanks very much for inviting me to such a very important event. And introductions, I think, are best if they're brief and don't spoil what's to follow. So I don't want to speak for a great deal of time. But I think it's such a timely event, this, because we're not, as a nation, we're not remembering World War One. We're deliberately, it seems, misremembering World War One. And I think that when you get your head around that, you know, the way in which the narrative of the war, the way in which the values of the war are being so politically and ideologically misrepresented by the government and by people who was former head of education, Michael Gove, you know, he systematically went about perverting people's knowledge of the First World War. And I think it tells you a lot about the country that we live in today. A declining country. A country that had liked to be more powerful in the world, but to be honest, is a clapped-out ex-imperial power. It's a country that seems to be locked at a government level, of all parties, into some sort of dogmatic paralysis, fear, locked into austerity, locked into war, and they can't get out of it. And it's astonishing when you listen to people like Tony Blair, when he says, what's the answer to the problem of ISIS in the Middle East? He says it's more military intervention. Completely unable to understand that war isn't a solution. It never was a solution. And I want to suggest to you that it wasn't a solution in 1914 either. Now, I think that the weakness of the argument that's been put up in the media, on the BBC and by the politicians, is that what they want to elicit is an emotional response. It's what Jon Snow calls on the BBC poppy fascism. If you haven't got on a poppy, there's something wrong with you. You're a traitor. You want to deliberately disrespect people, the millions of people who died in war. And I just want to mention one thing that matters very dearly to me, is that when I was 16, 17, I was very keen on history, as I've been all my life. And I had an uncle who fought in the First World War. He lived in Skelton, north of York. He was a conservative politically. All his life he voted for the Tories. But he fought in the trenches. He was conscripted when he was 16. So it was after 1916 when he went to war. And he fought at Passchendaele. He never mentioned it all his life. Until the end of his life, he said to me, I asked him about it, I wanted to know about it. He says, I'll tell you what. He said, if you read this book, it was, they call it Passchendaele. I think it's Lynn MacDonald who wrote the book, I can't remember. But he said, if you read that, he said, I'll tell you about it. Now, my Uncle Baz was very right-wing in his politics. When he talked about the war, he was very left-wing. Very left-wing indeed. And I can't tell you all the stories, I haven't got the time in this brief introduction, but he said one thing to me about the use of the word heroes, which is very important. And he said, there's nothing heroic about it. He said, my time in war was miserable. And he said, the main thing I remember about it is being wet. He said, I was wet all the bloody time, my boots were wet. I never got dry feet. He said it was awful. You know, there was no toilet. So he said, if you're actually on duty, sometimes you'll be out at the front. When you're at the front, everything happens at the front. He said it was disgusting. It stunk. You were wet through. And he says, the other thing I remember is waiting. You were waiting forever for something to happen. And then bad things did happen. But he told me about having to go and clean out a dugout when a shell had landed on a dugout and killed people. And he said, you can't look at them, at those bodies, and say they were heroic. They were just sat there drinking tea, writing letters, reading letters, and then a shell hit them and they died. And he said that's what the war was about. He said the people I saw did heroic things, and then one, he says, and then one person who I saw, he won a medal and he was a hero. He says, I saw one. He says, for the rest of us, you were trying to just get through it. And it was the most unheroic thing I've ever lived through. Now, sometimes, even though he's right-wing, he refused to wear a poppy because of that. And when I hear people like Michael Gove saying we want to remember the soldier's story, if only, because World War One ended as the biggest mass protest against war that the world has ever seen in this country, in Russia, in Germany, etc. Now, I've got to stick to my plan of being brief. What do we want out of today? Well, I think we have to put up a more reasoned approach to the World War One. We have to relearn the art of criticism, don't we? We have to ask the question, why? And one of the things that really has galled me as a history teacher is this objection that Michael Gove and the others have got, which is to lefty teachers telling the kids, when they talk about First World War, about how barbaric it was. Now, you know, it's difficult to watch a film clip of the war, to read any of the statistics about the war. 37 million people died, for goodness sake. How can you look at it and not say it was barbaric? Now, I think that one of the problems that they've got is they want to box World War One up. They want to make it a sort of dispute between the Kaiser and our government. They want to narrow it down and parcel it up so as you don't get the full picture. But the truth of it is, as an historian, I know that the barbarity was there well before people went into the trenches. In 1876, when Queen Victoria held the biggest party that India's ever seen, over 10 million Indians died of starvation the same year. Mike Davis, the American historian, called it a holocaust of people. People who applied for aid to the Viceroy, Lord Lytton, were told that they could only get food if they were prepared to submit a decent day's work. So to people who were on the edge of starvation, they were told that no work, no food. Why didn't they have food? Because Britain insisted on selling the crops on the world market that could have fed them. If you look at the story of Africa, the tragedy of Africa, the barbarity was there. Go on the internet, look up the children in the Congo with one hand cut off. They couldn't harvest rubber fast enough. The penalty is chop off a hand. Look at the pictures of German soldiers boxing up African skulls. They massacred thousands of Africans in Herero. They cut their heads off and they sent their skulls back in crates. For people who were later to be Nazis to do eugenic experiments on, to show that black people were not actually human, they were inferior to human beings. Read the will of Cecil Rhodes, the great British imperialist, who writes in his will that he wanted to found a secret society that could unite the world under British domination. And he said in an earlier letter, he said, if you want to avoid civil war in Britain, become an imperialist. Export your problems into the rest of the world. That's the way you avoid revolution at home, is to build empire abroad. Now that process of racism, of dehumanisation, of barbarity, that explains to me why it is that you couldn't drop shells and poison bombs and get people, young working class lads, to go into a trench with a club and to bash the brains out of somebody on the other side. That explains the barbarity. And Hazel said at the end of it, because one of the things that people come back to, which hopefully we can work our way around as well, is, but what if we hadn't gone to war? Wouldn't Germany then have dominated Europe? Wouldn't then we have had, you know, some form of you know, loss of democracy, a loss of rights, because Germany dominated the world? Now, I'll tell you that the war, World War One, leads directly to World War Two. Our side won, and then it led to treaties which divided humanity, which set one nation against another nation, and it led to war. And I used to say to my students at York College, who used to talk about Hitler and the Nazis, used to say, if you want to understand the Third Reich, study German defeat in World War One, and you've got it in a nutshell. Hitler took the logic of defeat and he made it a system of government and a system of further war. And you can't say that the British government's involvement at the end of the war as a victorious power wasn't an incumbent factor. on that. Now that's all really I want to say. I just want to say again, thanks to York Stop the War and York Alternative History for organising what looks to be a fantastic event. I think there's lots of interesting questions to come out of today, and I think we should ask those questions and share our knowledge and share our experiences. I doubt if we'll all agree on everything, but nevertheless, we can have a good day, and at the end of it, we can take out of York, we can take out into society the arguments why we should think twice about what the government tell us when they're glorifying war and making it into a poppy-laden carnival.
Wow.